This may actually set the record in my little world for the longest gap between visits to a congregation. Yeah. I think maybe 20 years ago I was here. That would have been right after we launched New Community Project. And I think I met you through some mutual friends in your area here who lived in Indianapolis. We met around a common interest, and that was work in South Sudan, ministry in South Sudan. And indeed, we did make a connection then. We've had a number of your congregation join with us on learning tours. Some of them are in the room here, to South Sudan. And you've also been a faithful supporter of our ministries there. So thank you very much. Just right off the bat, thank you very much for the big impact you've had in South Sudan on the people there and their well-being, actually. God has blessed them through you. So thank you so much for that. Next page. So you've heard already that I'm with New Community Project. We call ourselves a small nonprofit organization with a big goal, which is to change the world, just like you people here. If you're going to change the world, you have to pick your battles. You can't do everything. So we haven't really narrowed it that much, really, but what we focus on is care for God's earth, God's creation. We're making a fine mess of a fine planet. If I make it to heaven, which, you know, open-ended question at this point, but if I make it to heaven, if I make it to heaven, I'll have a couple of questions for our Creator. Well, the first one's going to be, where's the ice cream? Because can heaven really be heaven without heavenly hash? I mean, let's face that. Second question is going to be, is what were you thinking putting us in charge down there? You know us, short-sighted, self-centered, anthropocentric, thinking we're kind of the only game in town and that we don't have to abide by the rules of nature that govern everything else on this planet? No. Well, we are not the exception to the rule. We are part of the way things should be arranged in this world, and we haven't done that well at it. That'll be the focus of this sermon. Our second focus is peace through justice, fairness for other people in the world, especially women and girls around the world. They're often on the outside looking in. Native communities in the Americas, the Gwich'in way up in Alaska, the Navajo or Diné out in New Mexico, various tribal groups down in the Ecuadorian Amazon, and also marginalized people in our own society. A lot of people struggling right here in the United States over such things as food security. And so our sustainable living centers kind of reach out to those people as an important part of their ministry, keeping people fed, and actually in Vermont, keeping them warm in the winter with a firewood program. So reaching out to local people who have needs that a lot of the rest of us don't experience these days. Actually, they say that 14% of U.S. citizens regularly don't have enough to eat. You know that $200 billion that the Secretary of War wanted to add to the military budget here a couple of weeks ago? I did the math on that. That would feed all those people, that 40% of the U.S. population, for 10 years. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And having adequate nutrition would reduce health-related medical expenses in our nation by $160 billion over that same span of time. I'm not a mathematician. That's just about a wash, actually. Justice issues will be the focus of sermon number two today. And we focus on experiential learning as our methodology. The learning tours, where we take people like folks from your congregation to places around the world. Our sustainable living centers, where people come of all stripes, come and be involved and participate in improving the world of that little location. And also my song and dance, as I travel around the country talking. I do a lot of stuff in schools and colleges. I have done 22 presentations in schools this last week. First starting in Pennsylvania and then ending up here in Indiana. So we're kind of going for the jugular. We don't think you're really going to change people's lives on social media posts. We want to be in the room, whether they're coming with us on a learning tour or whether they're visiting us at one of our sustainable living centers or having to put up with me and my little presentation. We want to be with people, getting them in touch with the world in a different way, seeing the world from a different perspective, and then trying to figure out where is God going to take us from there. That's kind of how we do it. And so we want to experience the world in a way that is transformative, has the possibility to be transformative to us. Well, our experience of God's creation should be causing deep concern, if not putting us in panic mode, honestly. As I told the high school kids last week, there are 70% fewer wild creatures on Earth than when I was their age. That should be a warning bell of some kind. And they can quickly, these kids can quickly rattle off the reasons. Habitat loss, climate change, overharvesting, poaching. The one they often miss is roadkill. Every day in the United States, 1 million creatures meet their end on a U.S. highway. I'm a bicyclist down in Virginia where I come from, and so I see this stuff up close and personal. And maybe you do too if you walk through your neighborhoods. I see this stuff up close. The most painful thing I find are eastern screech owls. They'll fit in the palm of your hand. They have beautiful auburn feathers. They pick the wrong time to try to fly across the road and met their end on a windshield. I found a couple a year down on my 15-mile everyday bike ride. I found a couple of year. I at least give them a sort of a burial. I take them over and set them in the grass rather than on the macadam so that they have a final place of peace to call home. Oh boy, well, you know, we forget that back in Genesis, humans weren't the only creatures told to be fruitful and multiply. God said that to the birds and beasts as well. We've just been much better at it, actually. 70% fewer wild creatures, twice as many human beings since I was those kids' age. Plastics, need I say more? The world produces 460 million tons of plastic a year. 6 to 8% of it's recycled. Twice that much ends up in the ecosystem. And you know, in fact, they say it's the equivalent of 2,000 garbage trucks a day of plastic being dumped into the world's oceans. Not like the garbage trucks pull up right to the ocean and dump, but you know what I'm saying. Stuff that gets away from us and ends up downstream. And of course, the oceans are downstream from everything. And by the way, if you think about it, humans are the only creature that creates trash. Stuff that isn't readily reintegrated right back into the natural system and that can outlive us by hundreds, if not thousands of years. It's got to make God sad and mad, as the little girl said right here. Yeah. At the light breakfast after the sunrise, Easter Sunday sunrise service a couple of weeks ago, I had to sneak back into the kitchen to get a glass mug in order to keep from using the styrofoam cup that had been put out for us to our use this morning. You know, 5 or 10 minutes keeping something hot or cold, an eternity in the landfill. At least at Love Feast 3 nights before, we used plates and glasses. We honor the Creator if we respect and replicate the patterns of life that God has ordained. Climate change, what did I do with the thing? Here it is. Climate change, it's going to have our lunch. And quite literally sometimes. Let me see if I can. Yes, this is working. Thank you. Nice going back there. Anyway, we're going to Malawi in southern Africa, where we have ministries there as well as in South Sudan and the Congo and Rwanda in countries in Africa. We're in Malawi, southern Africa. Every time I've been there, which has been 3 times, people have been down to 1 meal a day because of climate change. A series of unusual floods. There's what was the cornfield flooding, which also disrupts infrastructure, which has a huge economic impact in areas of the world where people are depending on getting across the bridge to go take their things to market or to get things from market. When the waters rise with these big storm events that are happening these days around the world, or cyclones that they used to have before, when the waters rise, the crocodiles come up with them. And the kids walking to school in the morning don't know if there are crocs over in the bulrushes. And also, our friends there are so desperate for food that there's a big mango tree in many of the villages, and mangoes have thousands of fruit sometimes. But then when the water's up, the fruits drop, and then they are under the water. Nobody knows where they are. So they're fishing around with their hand trying to find the mango under the water, sometimes get their hands bitten off by crocodiles. My friend just sent me a message about this. So the desperation that we're bringing because of climate change to people all around the world. And then the other side of the flooding events, of course, is drought. And that's sort of the signature of climate change. Too much water or not enough water. You know, we're having a drought situation in Virginia right now where I live. Anyway, so what people do, you've got to take your available resource to earn some money to buy some food because you can't grow food anymore. So people make charcoal. This is a charcoal production operation right here. You cut down a tree, you chop it up, you stack it up, you set it on fire. You cover it with soil so it bakes in an anaerobic process without oxygen, and then you've got charcoal, which you sell out by the road. You can imagine there's a downside to this. For one family, to cut enough trees, to make enough charcoal, to earn enough money to feed their family for a month, you've got to cut down 2 acres of trees. per family, per month, 2 acres of trees. So you can imagine the impacts on the local ecosystem in terms of habitat for creatures, as well as it's keeping rainfall patterns going. And of course, all this contributes to climate change as well on the global scene. So what we're, one of the things we did when the first time we went there, we left some money for them just to buy emergency food. They're not causing climate change. Their carbon footprint, 0.3 tons per person per year. Ours in the United States, 17. So the rich world, the prosperous world, prosperous in some senses of the word, prosperous world is creating climate change, and the poor in the world are the ones suffering from it. And so we felt like this was like reparations, to leave some money for them to buy some food so they can make it to the next harvest. We're also planting trees. We have a 200,000 tree, we have a 2 million tree campaign, planting 200,000 trees each year around the world, including 60 or 70,000 in Malawi. And also we're planting 70 to 80,000 up in South Sudan this year. There are partners there. So there's my friend Tom Benevento. You can maybe pick him out of the crowd there, the guy in the middle there on the right. We've been working with the Jane Goodall Institute. May she rest in peace. We've been working with the Jane Goodall Institute to do agroforestry, where Jane realized decades ago that if people are hungry around a national park, the park is not safe. And so she and we have worked on a process where you integrate trees into the agricultural process. And so the trees are there providing some habitat for the creatures coming through, also fixing nitrogen in the soil, blocking if you've got windstorms or big erosion events of some kind or another. They block that stuff, and then the people also have food to eat. So things we can do to try to be creative. There's a before and after picture of some gardening areas after we've been working with our partners there to try to figure out some way to deal with climate change. And that's in terms of food production. And here, if you look, there's reforestation. You know, we can mitigate these things if we put our best minds together, both ours and theirs, whoever theirs are, whatever ours are, put our minds together, we can make things happen. And also keeping girls in school, a really important thing for addressing climate change. Because the more years a girl's in school, longer she's in school, the fewer children she's gonna have, and less impact on the local environment. Plus she's has more agency as a young woman to speak out about these things in the political sphere or the social sphere. So these girls were walking 14 miles each way to school each day, which would be tough on any of us. I don't know how many of us would be here this morning if we had to walk 14 miles to get here. I'm just saying. So anyhow, but I'm a bicyclist at home, which maybe I told you. And so I had the idea for a program we call A Girl and a Bike. So we could put these girls on bicycles. With $200, a girl gets a bicycle in first term's tuition, and off she's rolling to school. No longer having to get up before dawn and getting home after dark. Now she's got a quicker access to the education that she wants and needs. This woman's name is Nachi Sali. She was one of the organizers of these programs here in these little communities in Malawi. And I said, Nacha Sally, have you done anything like this before? She said, well, no. I said, why are you doing this now? She said, I'm worried about the future of my children. Her daughter's name on the left, Happiness. And there's the woman who makes all this happen on the ground in Malawi, our partner, Ataona Makunje. She's actually on our board now. We want an international voice on our board. And so she's the one whose organization, Creative Solutions for the Environment, is making all these good things happen in terms of food production, in terms of climate mitigation, all these, and tree planting, all that kind of stuff. I just want to give credit where credit is due. All these people that we're working with in the world, here in Malawi, up in South Sudan, they make us look really good, but they're the ones doing the good stuff on the ground. Well, climate change has other catastrophic impacts, as you might imagine. They say likely 1 billion climate refugees by 2050 around the world, having been forced from their homes by floods, drought, sea level rise, spreading disease vectors, extreme heat. I guess over 105 degrees with high humidity, the body stops functioning optimally. That's the scientific way of saying it. We just bake. We can't cool ourselves anymore. And conflict then over what resources remain. I mean, are the nations of the world rolling out the red carpet for refugees these days? Not exactly. And there's going to be a lot of people fleeing things that they did not cause in this world, but they're paying the price for. Why aren't we doing something about climate change? An exasperated fourth grader out in Seattle called out last month when I was out there. Or anything else for that matter. For that matter, we've got dramatic incline dramatic decline in wildlife, which I already talked about, dramatic incline in material use and trash production, which we were talking about earlier. By the way, every American needs about 25 tons of stuff from the earth every year to make their lifestyle happen, to make our lifestyle happen, 25 tons. and a dramatic thermocline in global warming. I guess last year, 2025, more greenhouse gases than ever before. Weren't we supposed to be going the other way? 38 billion tons, more than 1% more than the year before. Well, what keeps us marching toward the precipice? And what could be done to turn us back? And by the way, lemmings do not actually march off cliffs. That was fictionalized in a Disney movie back in 1958 or something like that. We are the only creature that knowingly does itself in. And we're supposed to be the smart kids on the block. I mean, you think about, you know, everything that's been God created, you think we would be the top of some mental pyramid, but yeah. Well, and you know, and Jesus is ready to help us avoid such a fate. And maybe that's what he was trying to tell our president in that AI post with Jesus and Mr. Trump in the same picture. Maybe he's whispering in his ear, there's some things you could be doing differently and better here, list by the way. We are more than what we drink, drive, dress, and drool over. To me, that sort of sums up this summary of the passage in Matthew 6 today. You know, I find it fascinating that our Lord had to talk about these things even way back then. People were uptight about food and drink, clothing, materialism. I mean, are we talking two donkey garages here? Are we talking designer sandals? You know, how can drink? They didn't even have my favorite diet, Dr. Pepper, back then, so what's all the drink fuss about? They weren't even harassed by advertisers in those days like we are these days. They say the advertisers spend $1,200 on each one of us trying to get us thinking that we're not quite okay unless we've got their product. $1,200 per year per person in the United States. The average American back in the 1960s was seeing about 75 commercial images every day. Want to take a guess about how many commercial images we're seeing today? They say 10,000. They say 10,000. They're flipping up and down our screen. They're every place else we look. And the purpose of all this is to make us feel insecure or inadequate in some way, either by comparing us to the Joneses or by reminding us that we certainly deserve better than this or by insinuating that we just aren't quite good enough, whatever the product that's being marketed in our direction. That's where God comes in. If we fall for the line of the marketers, we're agreeing with them that God somehow messed up in making us the way we are, or that our value is inextricably linked to how we stack up against others, or that we are simply entitled to the latest and the greatest, which can be financed for us, by the way, at a reasonable rate. And all this comes with other kinds of price tags. Anxiety, which our scripture today talks about, which manifests itself in everything from eating disorders to higher crime rates as people want what others have. Spiritual uncenteredness, we forget that God, through whom the kingdom community, a community of simplicity and generosity and ecology, if these things are practiced, God can provide for us. Now, of course, we've got to practice those things, but God can provide for us and provide for our needs, just like as for the birds and the bees and the flowers and the trees. An environmental catastrophe. They say if everybody consumed in the world like we in the United States do, and they all want to, we'd need 5 more planets. Where are we going to get them? Well, we guess we can count on Elon Musk to. Somebody needs to show another way. For soul's sake, reminding us that we are more than our stuff. For neighbor's sake, especially the poor who suffer the excesses of the rich. And for Earth's sake, which will only survive and thrive if we can move from me more now to us enough tomorrow. And if others can see that there's someone else willing to take this other path, it may give them courage as well. I was out in California speaking in schools recently, and on one particular day I had led half a dozen classes in an elementary school, pretty much talking nonstop. By the end of the day, my throat was parched and raspy. I was having dinner at a friend's house later on in the evening, but I had an hour till then. And what I really needed in the interim was a diet Dr. Pepper. Throat therapy. Understand what I'm saying here? You know what I'm talking about. And I knew I was passing McDonald's on the way to this guy's house. So I pulled into the McDonald's parking lot and then scouted the trash cans looking for used drink cups. I'm not going to use fresh plastic. found one, took it back into the restroom where they have warm water, washed it out with soap and water right there in the McDonald's restroom. Then I went up to the counter and ordered my Dr. Pepper, mentioning that I'd brought my own cup, upon which the young woman behind the desk said, "It's free." I guess there was some policy in that particular McDonald's. You brought your drink cup back from the previous visit and you get a free drink. Well, I didn't quite know how to explain the situation. So I just accepted the gift and went on with my life, which meant to head on back to the drink dispenser. As I headed back to the drink dispenser, I noticed a 50-something-year-old guy there, an employee of McDonald's, his McDonald's cap on, black hair streaming, dangling out from under his cap. He was cleaning up our messes. That was his job. Anyway, at the dispenser, the first stop was ice. But of course, ice takes energy to make. So I began fishing some out of the tray. And I could tell the guy was watching me. Finally, he comes over and says, "You know, if you push your cup up against that little metal bar, ice will come out." He must have known I was from Virginia, where we don't have such things. Well, I explained what I was doing and why. And he says, "You know, I care about the environment too." And then with a big grin, he says, "I wonder if the president ever thinks about the environment." And then he went on to tell me some of the things he was doing to show a little more respect to Mother Nature. You know, this is a ministry we need to exercise. Somebody needs to break the ground, break the path, show the way to these other places that we all need to be going. This is a ministry we have. We have to do what we can where we are, even and especially in public, so as to free up others to come out of the closet with their own concerns and actions related to God's earth. Caring for the environment can be in a lonely path, as we all know. Caring for the environment can be a lonely path, and knowing that others are walking along with us can give us courage, a sense of accompaniment, and remind us that we are the sane ones. It's easy to think when you see everybody else heading the other direction, am I missing something here? Am I off the path? But if we find others who are in it with us, we are reassured that we're on the right track. And even if people around us look at us askance or actively deride our actions, we can't let embarrassment or even opposition stop us. God's earth does not have time to waste. One earth, one chance. I meant the title of this sermon, I guess, to create a little small sense of urgency. Honestly, it's hard to know if we'll get our environmental act together in time to avert catastrophe. And not just for us. This is for generations to come we're talking about here. The things we're doing to the planet will live on as our stamp on the future, far down the path. But that's not what really matters, whether or not we'll be able to pull this off. What really matters is whether we do what we can, while we can, to honor the creation by caring for God's handiwork, whether or not this will finally be successful. Last fall, a kid out in Souderton Area High School, when I was doing presentations there, we were in a big auditorium there, and he came up just before I got started, had a white erase board there. He came up just before I got started and said if he could write the number 67 on the white erase board. Well, I thought about that for a second. It's some kind of, he wanted to annoy his teacher. That was the point of this whole exercise. Well, at some point, it's some kind of cryptic numerological reference that kids alone know what it means, if it means anything. I don't really know. But in any case, I thought about it for a second, and then I said, yes. Yeah, you can. And then at the end of that session, an hour and 25 minutes later or something like that, at the end of that session, I said to the group, that number 67, do you know what happened on June 25th, 1967? It was the world's first global simulcast concert. 400 million people turned in to hear the Beatles perform a song especially commissioned for the occasion by the British Broadcasting Corporation. The title of the song, All You Need Is Love. And I said to the kids, we don't know how this is all going to turn out. My generation has left you with an environmental mess. I'm sorry for that. But what matters now is that you love and respect this earth so much that you take care of it. no matter what. Because we don't abandon what we love, even if the future doesn't look that bright. As Jesus called those first listeners to love themselves, to love and trust their Creator, to love and respect and listen to God's creation, so this same God call, this same call comes down to us through the ages. The earth may be teetering in the balance. Our response is to do what we do and be who we are and love this place that God has given us to call home. We can't know if this will change things enough to save the day and ensure the future. But if anything can, this will. Because maybe, just maybe, all we needed was love to give this earth the one chance it needed to thrive in the way that God intended. May this be so. For the glory of God, for our neighbor's good, for the healing of all creation, and of we ourselves. Amen.